Coming up on this week's show.
After all this time, now you come to visit me, brother. Why? To mock a new Joel.
I've been trying to find the Wolverine for over a year.
It's not who I am anymore.
TheUnheardNerd.com.
By the power of Grayskull, you're listening to another edition of the Unheard Nerd movie podcast. I'm one host, my name is Will, and with me is a second host because we offer value for money. Hello, John.
Hello, Will. Hello, everyone.
And welcome. What an exciting show, John. What an exciting show. God, it's a bit Marvel-tastic this week. And we've got loads to get in, absolutely loads. So
I think
we should sort of just dive straight into it rather than procrastinating like we did last time and talk about other stuff for about half an hour. So John, since the last time we spoke, what was the last podcast? Was it a special? It was the Halloween podcast. You're right, absolutely. That was bad. We're not good at Halloween, but we are good the rest of the year round, I think. But it would be nice if somebody acknowledged that and let us know.
Yes, the numbers on the website, don't lie.
Exactly. I mean, we may have been a little bit misleading in the last show. I mean, we get a lot of hits. That doesn't necessarily translate into listeners, but to get that number of hits, I think we're getting quite a lot of listeners. So thank you, everyone, for listening. But if you want to get in touch, please do that. You can do so on Twitter. You can catch me on @TheUnheardNerd, and you can catch John @UKFilmNerd. And we're on Facebook. It's facebook.com/TheUnheardNerd. We're on Google Plus, and they have proper URLs now. So it's google.com/+TheUnheardNerd. Wow, making it difficult there, Google. Thanks. And of course, you can email us at theunheardnerd@gmail.com. Soon to be willandjohn@theunheardnerd.com.
Awesome.
I know, we're making tracks. We've got a new website coming very soon. When we launch that, we're going to be giving away some pretty cool prizes. I'm trying to line up as many as possible specific to each of the sections on the website. So look out for that. That's coming soon at theunheardnerd.com. Right, on with the show. John, what have you watched? Hello. You're there. Thank goodness.
I have.
What have you watched since the last time we spoke?
Pacific Rim.
Hadn't you watched that last time? You'd watched that last time.
Yeah. Oh, we watched that?
You definitely said you'd watched that last time. I think you're doubling up. But Pacific Rim is awful, isn't it?
Fuck off. Awesome.
It's awesome. I still haven't seen it. I really must get on with that. I think now I've put it on my love film list. But here's a sad story. Currently at home, for my love film subscription, the Blu-ray I have at the moment is Wreck-It Ralph, which I sat down to watch with my kids the other day.
Yeah.
No more than about 15 minutes in, they said they were tragically bored and didn't understand it and didn't want to watch it, which was heartbreaking because now I'm convinced they're adopted. But no, I think they're too young. 3 and 6, they're probably a bit too young for it. They didn't understand it. So I've got to watch that, but then I should expect Pacific Rim next because I've put that as a highly wanted film to come through.
What did you think of the amount of Wreck-It Ralph you did see?
I was really enjoying it, and I was really trying to just stick with it, kids. Stick with it. It's look, there's Sonic. You don't know who that is, do you?
Look, there's Zangief.
don't know who that is either. You're a little bit scared by the zombie. But no, I will watch it through. It's not one I can watch with the wife either, really. I shouldn't mention this. What I should have been saying that I've seen since last time we spoke was Gravity, because it's getting rave reviews. Looks to be awesome. I was sucked in by the trailers from day one. I really, really wanted to see this. The wife and I said, okay, let's try and get a babysitter. We'll go and see it.
Yeah.
She went and saw it with someone else.
Oh.
We were laying in bed the night before she went, and it was literally last thing before I was going to sleep. I knew she was going out, yeah. I knew she was going to the cinema. I thought they might be going to see Hunger Games, the latest film. And I said, what are you going to see? And she's like, don't be angry. Oh, you're going to see Gravity. Okay. So she's been to see it. She said it's amazing. She says the 3D is totally worth it. It works really well for it. She said it almost makes her feel dizzy and sick. We've discussed that phenomenon with Event Horizon, and that wasn't even in 3D. Yeah. The opening sequence, which was. She says, yeah, the depth of perception when they're out in space is just incredible. So I haven't seen that. And unless I go on my own, which yeah, I could do, but I've got a lot of other stuff going on at the moment. I'm not going to see it until it comes through on DVD or Blu-ray. So gutted on that one. What else have you watched? What's anything?
Does last night's Doctor Who count? That's feature length. That was fucking awesome.
It was feature length. We'll come back to that because it links in with another section. No, it doesn't count at this moment. I'm going to cut that out of the podcast.
Git.
I have also watched some kind of retro stuff lately. I've been watching some DC animation, some Marvel animation, movies and not so much movies, which people will find out about later. I'm not going to spoil that at the moment. What I also watched today, and I don't for the life of me really know why I did it, but I sat down and watched The Green Lantern again.
Oh, the one with Ryan Reynolds, yes.
Ryan Reynolds, yeah, my man crush, as you know. And anyone that's listened to a previous show will know. Yes, Ryan Reynolds, he's so dreamy, but that film... That film is so bad.
It's not very good, is it?
I don't like it. And I don't know why I watched it again, because I knew it was bad. So I watched that. What else have I watched? I'm pretty sure I've watched some other films, but I can't remember what they are.
I watched The Colony.
Oh, yes. How was that?
That was sort of pretty run-of-the-mill, but it's, you know, sort of okay for an hour and a half. I mean, you've got Bill Paxton and Lawrence Fishburne, and it's all snowy and...
Some sort of apocalypse, and there are outposts or colonies, hence the title, on Earth. Is that correct?
Yeah. Global warming's gone wrong. We try to stop it, I think. Oh, did we? I can't remember. But basically, everywhere's snow and really cold, and everyone lives underground in the aforementioned colonies, and they all communicate with each other to make sure everyone's okay. And then one of the colonies stops communicating. So a small search party goes out to find out what's happened to them, and of course, you know, it's not going to be they'll be welcomed with open arms with tea and cakes and stuff. You know, something's gone wrong.
Yeah, really crap film otherwise. Hey, no, everything's fine. Hey guys, come over, we found some beer.
Yeah, the radio stopped working, that's all. Come on in.
I was too pissed to notice, but yeah, come on, it's great, we're having a party, and we're playing Gangnam Style on loop.
Oh, God.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, God. I just got to go back. Sorry.
I'd rather die in the freezing wasteland. Thanks.
Cool. So, well, we've watched some stuff. That's good. I like it. I went to the Kids Club this week. Kids Club update. Film for young nerds. I took my kids to see The Jungle Book yesterday. That brand new, quite old film. The original Jungle Book animation. Yeah. It was, yeah, still amazingly good, and such are the times that my eldest daughter, as she often does when we come back from watching films at the kids club, she goes, yeah. Daddy, when this one comes out on DVD, can we buy it? I'm pretty sure it's been out a while. But bless her, she didn't know. She thought it was a new film, which is sweet.
1940 something, isn't it, I think?
It's very, very old. It apparently took 4 years to make, something along those lines, to animate it.
The old hand-drawn days.
Yeah, but, you know, amazing, just amazing film, really good. A little bit, you know, naive these days, but still very enjoyable. And it reminded me that in my attic, I've got the original 12-inch LP that accompanied that with all the music on.
Yeah, so did my parents.
You've got that as well?
My parents had that, yeah. I remember watching it. I don't know if it was on video or if it was on the telly, but I remember watching it, and I used to listen to listen to the vinyl. Yeah. My mum's record player.
Well, there we go. Yeah, we've still got that. I wonder how much that's worth.
I think my favourite, the one I remember listening to the most is the, I can't think of the name for it, the Beatles ripoff of the Vultures.
Oh, right. Oh, yes, yes. And there we go. Not only do you get movie news, but also vinyl news, keeping it real. Keeping it 2013.
That's right. Hey, have you heard about CDs?
No, man. Aren't they indestructible and you can spread jam on them and they won't ever break?
So we were told.
Thanks, Tomorrow's World. That was bullshit. I wonder you're off the air. Anyway, keeping it 2013, let's move on to our next section, which is original film. What's coming up, John?
I'm starting to branch into TV as well.
Well, that's interesting you say that. Let's let our listeners in on a little thing that I've not even told you yet. I was thinking when we relaunched the website that we obviously will try and tighten up the web, the podcasts, and maybe relaunch the podcast a little bit as well to coincide, make everything nice and fresh. And I was thinking of maybe moving away from just a movie podcast and making it a screen podcast. So movies and TV. What do you think of that?
I like that very much. There's so much decent TV around.
There is, and
it's rivaling the movies for entertainment. The quality that's on your small screen now.
We may differ there slightly. We may have a disagreement. Depends what you're going to talk about. But in terms of crossover, there's the Thor Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. crossover. You may not have watched it yet. I know you're catching.
I think it's the next one for us to watch. I haven't seen that one yet.
And really fucking annoyingly, Marvel, the UK, the UK is now a week behind the US because they had a week off here.
Did they? Oh.
I can't remember what it was for. It was probably for some really important shit that I'm not interested in.
Was it because it's Children in Need night and decided not to put it on?
It could have been. Oh, Jesus. Now I feel bad. Yeah, fuck the kids in need. Let's watch. come on. Anyway, so we're a week behind the US now. So your Twitter feed is constantly giving away stuff that's coming up and... rather annoying. So if America, if you would all just not watch for a week, record it and watch a week later, thanks. That would be awesome. Anyway, we've detoured again. What's coming up on the OG section, TV and film?
The Strain, which is a trilogy of vampire novels I've spoken about before, oh God, many, many podcasts ago.
Okay.
I think it's the FX channel. They've given it the go-ahead for a full season. John Hurt was originally cast a role in this TV series as a... aging professor called Satrakian.
Satrakian.
Who's the? He's kind of one of the only people who knows, who these vampires really are and how to kill them. But apparently, for whatever reason, he's dropped out, and it's now gone to an actor called David Bradley, which probably won't mean much to many of you.
No.
Unless I say, the first example we'll immediately get you, Will. It's the It's a guy who played William Hartnell in the An Adventure in Space and Time drama from the other night.
What an idiot. I was sitting here thinking, I know the name, but I'm going to say no anyway. I couldn't think what it was for. But yes, okay. Well, he was fantastic in that program, by the way. Adventures of, was it Space and Time? Fantastic. If you haven't watched it, I'm not a Doctor Who fan by any stretch of the imagination. I don't care. I've not watched it pretty much since Tom Baker and the guy that followed him. I can't remember his name, something Davison, Peter Davison. I can't remember. Yeah. I haven't really watched Doctor Who since then, but that program was very emotional, actually very touching. I really enjoyed that, and I recommend it to anybody. Check that out. But sorry, go on. He's been cast in The Strain.
Which is a project that's being overseen by Guillermo del Toro.
Okay, your favourite.
One of my favourites. And I've read the novels as well, and this, it's all... They're vampires, but it's passed around like a virus, if that makes sense. It's like these little tiny worms that are in your bloodstream that cause you to go all vampiric, if that's the correct term.
Bit pale, sharp teeth.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Thirst for blood.
But it's I really enjoy it. If you go find the novels and read them, even it might spoil the series, but who cares? Read the novels, they're really entertaining.
Oh, good. What's next?
Well, we've got Peter Jackson currently doing his Lord of the Rings thing with The Hobbit.
Mm-hmm.
So they decided they're going to make a biopic of Tolkien himself.
All right, okay. So a biopic on Tolkien, but hopefully not as long as the films. Couldn't stand 6 hours of him.
Apparently it's going to be very similar to Finding Neverland, that the Johnny Depp film of the Peter Pan creator J.M. Barrie.
Did you watch that? I didn't see it.
I haven't seen that. Yeah, no.
Would you watch it? Do you think you'd be interested?
Yeah, I don't see why not.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a Johnny Depp film without Tim Burton, so
oh yeah,
it'll be different.
Good point. No, it does look interesting. Any more on that?
It tells the story of his early years at college and his experiences as a soldier in World War One, which apparently affected him greatly.
He locked himself in a room and started writing really long books. Traumatic.
I'm sensing something here, Will.
Do you know, I like the idea of The Lord of the Rings, but I would never get through the books, I'll be honest. I like reading. I read all the time. I always have a book. Sometimes I have three books on the go, but I'm not a fast reader. And to take on something that big, I mean, it took me, honestly, no word of a lie, about 2 years to read the Steve Jobs biography. And not because I couldn't get into it, but I just kept leaving it because it's such an immense mass of work or literature to read through.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have time to sit down for like an hour and read. It's like I'm reading 10 or 15 minutes at a time on my commute or of an evening before I go to sleep. I don't get that time with kids, with work, with other interests, podcasts, website, blah, blah, blah. I don't get the time to sit down and really get stuck into a book. So something that long, I just don't have the time for. And I find it a daunting prospect. I like the idea of it. And before I die, I will read The Lord of the Rings.
I've tried.
But again, the films are just immense. They're too long and just I got so bored watching them, which is terrible to say because I should like them, but I just don't like them. So there you go. Shoot me if you like. What's next?
Okay. Right. So we've had the popular Fast and the Furious franchise, which is currently filming number fill in the blank. What are they filming? Seven?
Seven now? Or eight or yeah, seven.
I don't know.
Seven. I'm pretty. Oh, hang on. If they did Fast Five, they did. Yeah, I think it's seven. They're doing now.
Yeah. Well, Electronic Arts obviously got a little bit jealous, and they pushed Need for Speed. That's now going to be a movie next year, isn't it? Have you seen the trailers for that?
Yeah, that's a thing.
That's a thing. And now Sony are obviously feeling a little bit jealous. The guy who wrote the script for Watchmen, a guy called, I can't pronounce his name, it's Alex, but then it's T-S-E. I don't know if that's Say or something.
I think it's Say.
Alex Say.
Yeah.
He's working on a film adaptation of Gran Turismo.
What? There's no plot.
I mean, you just said it. There's no plot. It's like pick a car, do a race. How can you work that into a piece of
it's supposed to
filmic
be
entertainment?
Just a very realistic representation or simulation of driving different types of cars.
I've heard it called that. I mean, you call it a game and the people go, it's not a game, it's a driving simulation. You go, that's why it's so boring then. I tried it. I can't get into it. What? But as a film?
Its core element, I mean, I haven't played it again. I haven't played it for a long time, probably since the original PlayStation when it first came out. But I mean, there was that you drive in races to earn money. You improve your car, improve the equipment you've got, and you get onto another race. Obviously the better your car is, the faster you go, the higher up you come, the more money you win. You progress. There's a career element to it.
Yeah.
But there's no plot at all. And you could take any game, you could just pluck any title out of thin air and write a script for it. It's just branding.
A racing movie with a name, isn't it?
Exactly. They're taking an existing brand that is quite well known and quite well respected within the, dare I say, gaming community. And you're going, right, we're going to just make a shitty film and attach the name to it. I mean, just seems pointless to me, absolutely pointless. But I'm sure the Fast and Furious and the Need for Speed demographic will like it and enjoy it. And I'm not excluding myself from that. I've always said I've got a bit of a soft spot for the Fast and Furious films, though I think I've only seen up to the third one. I haven't seen it any further than that, I don't think. I don't know, I can't remember.
I've seen one and two. I think I stopped at two.
Yeah, and I don't mind them. They're trashy. They're easy to watch. There's nothing, you know, too taxing about them. But yeah, they're not high art, that's for sure. And do I need to watch another franchise doing exactly the same thing? Probably not. I think I'll probably give it a miss.
And how long before Nintendo joined the act? You know, they stick a
Mario in
a gorilla in a go-kart and start filming it.
I mean, that I might watch. That might be more entertaining. You could do that for kids. I mean, there probably has been a Mario Kart TV series spin-off at some point that we just, you know, we're not that demographic, we wouldn't pick up on. But
I saw an advert for DS stuff on the telly yesterday, and it's like Mario Kart 7. I was like, seven?
Seven, yeah. And you're never going to beat the first one. It's always going to be the best. So our mutual friend Craig Stewart, I'm reminded of. He was the angriest man playing Mario Kart ever. He used to throw his controller around quite a lot, didn't he?
Do you ever see him play Street Fighter 2?
I don't know if I ever...
That was scary.
Craig.
I saw him throw controllers at the wall.
Lovely guy. Gaming rage. Right, okay, so that was OG. Nothing more to add on that note.
No, what can you add to that?
What can you? Exactly, enough said.
It's been discussed. Moving on.
Moving on. Okay, this is exciting, our next section. It's this where we start to get Marvelistic. We were very excited to be invited to a preview screening before it came out in the cinema in the UK. That's a few days before it comes out in the UK. It's more than a week before it came out in the US and many other parts of the world. We were invited to a preview screening of Thor, A Dark World. And John couldn't come.
I was at work. I couldn't make it. Yeah. Thanks for the taunting, by the way.
But appropriately enough, the screening was taking place on the evening of the day where the UK was expecting to be battered and bruised from one of the biggest storms we've seen in centuries to hit the UK. I'll be honest, I didn't notice it.
No.
I know the trains were pretty messed up in the morning. I couldn't get to work without getting a bus and then getting on the tube. Elephant and Castle, it was a nightmare getting around. But by the evening, I was able to make it to the Soho Theatre just off of Leicester Square in you know, the movie capital of London. And it was good. It was nice. You turn up. I've been to the Soho Theatre once before for a different premiere, a short film premiere. One of my wife's friends was premiering a film at a sci-fi convention there. So I'd been there before. I knew where it was. And, the bar, get a beer. I invited my friend Ben along, who is notoriously late. He was late. But we got little mini stress reliever Mjolnirs handed out. There were guys in T-shirts running around taking your picture against one of those boards with, you know, Thor, Dark World and on the back, and Skype. It was sponsored by Skype. And Skype, you know, Skype Moments invited us along to see the film before it hit the cinemas. Very exciting. You go into the screening and there's free drinks and free popcorn on the seats and security guards with night vision. That was weird. Don't normally get that in your local multiplex.
Not really. Did they ask to take your phone?
They didn't take our phones, but they insisted that we turn them off. And obviously the night vision was to make sure that we weren't filming it or photographing or recording in any way, which is fine. It's all good. And we had the fancy 3D glasses, not the standard sort of real 3D ones you get, but they're the active 3D Ooh. Glasses with the red rimmed. And so I actually for once got on with them. I didn't find my lenses slipping around while I was watching the film, and I was sat on the left of the screen, which usually triggers that. You know, I could watch it again. I didn't think 3D was worth it. You forget it's even happening after about 15 minutes. You know, at first it's like 3D in your face, and then after a while you're like, you've got so used to it you don't even notice really that the 3D's there. But I really enjoyed the film a lot more than I expected to, and I really enjoyed the first one. So, you know, I had expected to enjoy this one. I enjoyed it even more. You've been to see it with your good wife, who's a massive Chris Hemsworth fan, haven't you?
Yes, he's indeed.
And what did you think of it?
I have to admit, I was quite cautious.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I mean, Marvel are on such a roll. They don't seem to make. They haven't really made anything bad since Iron Man, have they?
Since Iron Man.
Since Iron Man.
Are you implying
Iron Man?
Are you implying that Iron Man was bad?
No, I don't know.
That made anything
no, no,
bad.
No. I mean since Iron Man's excellent. I'm saying since Iron Man and the films from that point have all been really good.
I disagree slightly. I still don't think Iron Man's that great. Iron Man 2 is awful, in my opinion. Still haven't seen Iron Man 3, so jury's out on that.
Okay. I mean, I picked Iron Man as a start point because before Iron Man was...
It was pretty shoddy before Iron Man.
Yes.
Iron Man was number one in phase one of the new Marvel universe, or cinematic universe as it is. So
that's when Marvel took control themselves, didn't they? Iron Man was a film made by Marvel rather than Marvel licensing out to someone else.
Exactly. And we're keeping with that theme. I don't know if you noticed, but at the beginning of Thor, they had a new sort of ident, their new logo.
Yes, the flicking comic pages.
Exactly. I mean, there's a small element of that. And actually, you'll see that same intro at the beginning of the Thor crossover Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Episode. But the reason behind that is that obviously they wanted just to refresh the logo, but they wanted it to be very bold, very crisp and clean, because usually there's another studio associated with a Marvel film. This Thor film apparently is the first one for a long time that actually doesn't have any other studio associated with it, which I thought was quite interesting. I guess they distributed it themselves. I don't know for sure. I mean, people who are more into film than me will know that. But
they're owned by Disney, aren't they?
They are. Yeah, exactly. So this is what inspired the change of logo, and I quite like it. I mean, I do like the flipping comic pages. I really like that. I always like that. But yeah, the new one is quite crisp and clean. Quite like that. But as far as the film, as I was going into the cinema. Having recently caught up and watched the first Thor film again,
mm-hmm.
What really hit home when I was watching that was how small it was in terms of location. Everything on Earth was one location. It was a desert, very easily managed, very small area. You know, you can see that they filmed it with a budget in mind and kept it quite small. And the Asgard stuff, obviously, CGI, it's a lot easier to create an expansive world in Asgard in a computer. That was very apparent to me when I was watching that compared to other Marvel films that have come since. What I expected from a Dark World was that it would be much bigger. It would be more expansive. There'd be more sets, more different locations, a lot more going on. Asgard would still be immense, but even more so. And I wasn't disappointed by that. I tried to steer away from what was going on in terms of spoilers for Thor before I went and saw it for the second one. So I knew it was set in London, or parts of it were set in London, because I'd seen the trailers in Greenwich specifically, which as anyone who listens regularly will know is where I take my kids to the kids club, the Greenwich picture house in Greenwich. And it was interesting to see that it was it was all set in London, on Earth. And I guess, I mean, London's always a very grey backdrop in any film. It's very difficult to make it a colourful place. It just is grey. And the problem is, I mean, on a beautiful...
And it was raining as well, just to be different.
Well, of course. But I mean, the thing is, it rains, 60% of the time, probably, in London, doesn't it? It's overcast most of the time. I mean... You would be stupid to just try and pick sunny days to film on where it's colourful and bright and there's blue sky. It makes no sense to do that. So you're going to go for a grey and rainy. I completely understand that. But it was nice. It was larger expanse. I thought it was a little bit twee to set it in London, but it didn't offend me. It was nice to see Greenwich, places I recognise, iconic architecture. Probably some of those aerial shots. You could probably see my house if you zoomed in close enough, which is cool. You'd have to zoom in a very long way. But we are south of the river there, not too far from it. And if you're looking at Greenwich, we are not that far from it. It literally takes me 10 minutes to drive there in the car. And that's with some tricky junctions to get out of as well. Asgard, again, looked magnificent, open, expansive, wide, you know, sumptuous, colourful, and as you'd expect. And then what I really liked was there's a fight, you know, moments where they're fighting, and there's like portals between realms. And they're sort of falling from realm to realm, having this big battle. I don't want to give away too many spoilers for anyone that hasn't seen it. But I thought that was really well done, and some really nice comic-y moments. Lots and lots of humour, lots of slapstick that I really enjoyed in the first film. I mean, I pissed myself when he got run over in the first film. even more so the second time it happened. I was expecting the first Thor film to be quite straight, and to have those comedy elements in it was very fun. I mean, they've ramped that up an awful lot for the second film. And I really,
it doesn't have to say it's welcome though.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I mean, it's a really it's a good balance. Interesting. It's like Kenneth Branagh did not direct this one.
No.
I think that's probably, I don't know, it's probably a good thing. I mean, I thought he did a good job with the first one, and whoever's taken it on, I can't remember, has obviously taken elements from that, looked at it as a whole, and gone, right, this is where we can expand on that, and they have throughout the whole film. It's not a bad. Not a bad plot either. You know, it moves along at a very good pace. There's lots of really fun elements coming together. Even the bit, you know, the sort of supporting cast are more involved and you know, funnier. I never really understood the point of the assistant girl that was always there. It didn't really add much other than a little bit of sarcasm. She's equally sarcastic, but more so, and sort of has a sort of vague part to play in the film. So I really enjoyed it as a whole. Thoroughly, definitely we'll buy that one when it comes out for home release. We'll definitely watch that over a few more times.
The surprising cameo, which I won't spoil for those of you who haven't watched it.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, when I watched it, obviously we're at the preview screening, nobody knew, none of that had come out. You know, there were no spoilers on the net, I don't think, about it at the point. And it did take everyone a bit by surprise, and there was a big, you know, sort of roar of laughter when the cameo happened. I was a little bit more jaded, probably. It takes a lot to get me excited by that kind of thing, but it's nice. It was a nice touch. And then anyone that hasn't seen it yet, stay right to the end of the credits, like literally
the very very end,
very very end, because you'll think partway through the credits, you'll think, oh well, that must be it. Don't leave, stay right to the end, because there are two end of sort of one mid-credit, one end-of-credit scene. The mid-credit one, I mean, again, we don't want to give spoilers away, but I thought that was quite interesting and gave an insight as to what is going to happen. I know maybe that ties into Age of Ultron, the second Avengers film. I think there's going to be, with more, each Marvel film that comes now is going to contribute to that sort of plot point. What I will say is, with Thor 2, is like, I mean, it's very much the same plot as the Avengers. There's a very powerful energy source that, you know, wants one group want to manipulate for evil. You know, the good guys need to protect it and take it away and hide it from the world. You know, it's very much like the Tesseract, except it's called the Ether. And you know, it's kind of the same story, but then you get to the end and you get to the extra scene, sort of mid-credits, and it kind of makes sense as to why that is. And I think we're going to see that a bit more sort of recurring in later Marvel films as they come up. So, yeah, I mean, that those are my thoughts on when I went to Thee Thor Thu. And Thee Thor, you know what I'm saying. See Thor 2. And, what did you think of it when you saw?
I loved it. I can't decide whether it's better than the original or not yet.
Oh, I would have to say better, personally.
I still haven't made up my mind. I need to watch it some more. It should be a while, but until it comes out on Blu-ray. But yeah, I definitely want to watch it again.
Yeah, I just thought, you know, much, much more fun, a lot more action, much faster paced, a lot more, I don't know, it just looked a bit grander. It looked a lot more, a bigger budget Marvel film. Which I thought
there was a sort of a love triangle thing almost set up that didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, and
I can't remember her name. Thor's friend. She was jealous of Natalie Portman, wasn't she?
Sif.
But then Sif, that's it. But then it doesn't really go anywhere.
Well,
apart from that, it's all good.
All except for one part of it that really bugged me, which and this is a spoilery bit, but I'm sorry, I've got to mention it. The tube scene is just okay for the rest of the world. It's not going to matter too much for the rest of the country, probably, but for anyone that lives in London and travels on the Northern Line, when Thor is on the tube and he asks how many stops to Greenwich, firstly, you're not going to get there on the Northern Line, okay? From Charing Cross, you're not. You're going to end up at, Oval or something like that if you go south, which you would have to do to get anywhere near. I don't think Thor's going to be playing cricket or watching cricket. It's unlikely. But apart from that, yeah, watching it in central London, probably, you know, people were going home on the Northern Line thinking, what? But still a very funny scene. I enjoyed that a lot.
So how many letters have you written to Marvel at this point?
How many have I written?
Yes. Well, complain about that.
I haven't written any letters complaining about Thor 2. Okay. So I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a spectacularly good film. One of my favourite Marvel films, actually, to date. And I was never, mythology, axes and swords and that kind of stuff, Lords of the Rings type stuff. And it doesn't appeal to me in any way, but Thor's different somehow. I've become a real big fan since the first film. I've read the comics now and caught up on that. And my kids are really, really interested in Thor. I mean, I gave them the Mjolnirs that I picked up at the screening. And they've really enjoyed those and just wanted to know a lot more about Thor. And there I am telling them all about the Marvel version. My wife's going, there are other books, don't you? it's based on other books. We should really get those books. Yes, dear.
No, Marvel.
So, anyway, so Thor, a sequel to the first, brings us nicely on to our next section on the Unheard Nerd Movie Podcast, which is sequels and prequels. I forgot the prequels. Maybe it should be called prequels and sequels, because prequels technically come before sequels.
They do indeed.
Maybe when we rebrand. What have we got in this section, John?
Tiny tidbits of information for Star Wars Episode 7.
Mm-hmm. Is that coming out? I haven't heard about that.
I don't know, some tiny independent low-budget thing.
That's a Marvel film, isn't it? Oh, no, Disney, same thing.
Disney. In what could be sort of no shocking surprise, it's been confirmed that R2-D2 will be in the new films.
Oh, yeah. I briefly saw that pop up on my feed today.
A tiny bit of news that probably everyone's expecting, but they decided to release it. What I did find interesting was a sort of behind-the-scenes story to go with that, which was the producer, a woman called Kathleen Kennedy, went to see there's a group in England called the R2-D2 Builders Club. They build screen-accurate replicas of R2-D2.
Yeah.
And she was so impressed by the quality of their work that she's actually employed two of them to become the R2-D2 experts for the new Star Wars film.
Oh, right, cool.
It's a bit of a dream come true.
So, John, as exciting as it is that R2-D2 is going to be in the sequel films, and I'm sure people are very keen to see that and for that to happen, I'm afraid it's bad news for R5-D4. He was contacted with a view to being in the films, but showed very little interest. Apparently he's a bad motivator.
<Woo-hoo>! Oh dear. Good night. But also, do you know the actor Jason Fleming?
No.
Best known for Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels?
No.
And he's in Kick-Ass and he's in X-Men First Class?
No.
Okay, you'll have to look him up on Google.
Which one is he?
I know he's in Lock, Stock, Two Smoking Barrels. I can't remember his character name.
What's his name?
Jason Fleming.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I know him.
He's auditioned for a role in the film. Okay. But he did it rather... to let people know, he posted an Instagram picture on his Twitter feed, which was a picture of the script page with a glass of beer on top, saying that he was sorted for the afternoon.
Oh, right.
And of course, everyone's been trying to zoom into the image to find out what they could read off the script page, which is probably pointless.
It's probably fake anyway.
Yeah, it's well known they give out fake pages of sort of similar dialogue for auditions.
Right.
And just to make sure they can't photocopy it, it's black ink on red paper.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So you really can't, you know.
Yeah.
But that image was taken down soon after. It was deleted. Make of that what you will.
Oh, hype, I imagine.
Probably.
It's interesting. It's nice. Another rumor I heard was that Matt Smith, I think it was is touted to have been approached for a role in the Star Wars films.
Who hasn't been at this point?
All the
names are being, you know.
Well, I'm still waiting, but you know. Technically, I'm not an actor, so I'll probably wait a long time. Okay, what's the next sequel and or prequel?
Man of Steel 2.
Right, so yeah, I'm interested. Instantly in. Man of Steel was awesome. I can't believe I don't own it on Blu-ray yet.
It's not out yet, that's why.
I keep saying that, don't I? Ball bags, you're right, it's not out.
It's out in the States. I think we're getting it on December 2nd.
December 2nd. I will have to wait until Christmas, I think. But that's a definite. I'm just basically giving that. Anyone that asks me what I want for Christmas, I'm just saying Man of Steel. And if I get 6 copies, at least I've got a copy.
Awesome.
And absolutely. So, okay, we know there's going to be Batman in it.
Yeah, it's just a small bit of news. It might not even be related, but Warners have been registering several domain names.
Ooh.
They've registered 8 so far.
Okay.
Now, these might just be merchandising tie-ins or something, or these could be the names of the next film. If they are, what I've seen is that everyone's rather disappointed because none of them are any good. Should we go through them?
Go on, yeah.
Okay. Man of Steel, Battle the Night. Night spelt with a K. Mm.
It's not the worst. It could be... I don't know what to, I don't know how to compare it so far. It's the first one we've heard. It's not the worst. Go on.
Okay, Man of Steel, Beyond Darkness.
That's a bit Star Trek-y, isn't it?
A bit too close. Man of Steel, Black of Night.
no good.
Okay, Man of Steel, Darkness Falls.
It's all right. That's not too bad.
Man of Steel, Night Falls.
No.
There's already a Nightfall, isn't there? It's a quite well-known Batman storyline.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That's spelt Nightfalls as in two separate words, but I know that the Batman storyline is just one word called Nightfall.
Yeah, you're right. But carry on. We'll come back to that.
Okay. Man of Steel, Shadow of the Night, except this time Night spelt without the K, so it's just Night as in the word normal Night.
Okay, right. That's not terrible. That's all right.
Man of Steel, The Blackest Hour. And finally, Man of Steel, The Darkness Within.
Right. I mean, there's quite a theme going through that, isn't there? It's a bit of a recurring theme.
It's just a little one, yeah.
They're definitely doing something quite dark with it, I would say. What I was going to come back to was obviously Kevin Smith famously, as you wrote up on the website, I think, famously announced that he had seen Ben Affleck in the bat suit.
Yes,
and what he says, I listened to that podcast, like, you know, on my way home, and then, you know, discovered that you'd written about it on the website, and it was Hollywood Babylon on the smodcast.com network, and what he explained was that the director, whose name is
Zack Snyder,
showed him a picture on his iPhone, basically of Ben Affleck in the bat suit, and what Smith said was that the suit is one that he recognizes, but it's not one that's ever been used in the cinematic world before. You know, it's a recognizable suit for fans of Batman. It's one, and he said it's ballsy that they've gone with it. So Nightfall, perhaps it ties in. I don't know whether Batman wears in Nightfall. I'll be honest, I don't know.
I mean, do you think they've gone for the sort of skin type material, so it's the muscles that show through rather than...
Yes.
Because all movie Batmans are all sort of fake muscles, or it's armour to look like muscle structure, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, no, absolutely it is. I mean, Smith said, you don't have the armour. He said, you know all the armour that, you know, Christian Bale wears and what they've gone with and nipple nuts and stuff like that. He says, forget all that. So I would say, yes, it's a skin tight suit. As opposed to, you know, something armoured.
Yeah.
So interesting, you know, it'd be fun to see how that goes, but I guess it ties in with, you know, Superman wears the skin tight, didn't he? So, you know, why not?
He's got the physique to show it off, hasn't he?
Really, exactly, and apparently, so is Affleck if he buffs up. He's got a good figure, I think. Not to go too homosexual again. But yeah, I think he can pull it off. We'll see. We'll see. There was also something about how Christian Bale came up with the voice. I didn't look into it. I saw the headline and I meant to click on it and didn't. But how he came up with the Batman voice and how he was unsure about it as well from the beginning.
Oh, I did read that. I forgot. I think the gist was, but in the screen test, they gave him, I think it was a George Clooney suit to wear.
Right.
With the nipples on, and I think he sort of went, I've got to wear this. This looks fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, right.
And I think he decided that he had to come up with a menacing voice to pull off the suit because the suit looked so rubbish at that point.
Mm. Okay. I think
that's come from.
Anything more on that?
No, that's the end of Man of Steel.
Okay, what's our third and final piece of sequel news?
Okay, we've got some. Tidbits on Wolverine. The director James Mangold has been speaking about his ideas for a sequel. He was asked would the sequel be based on a comic book storyline, and he said, absolutely, I can tell you that in determining where we are going, I'm not solely relying on my own imagination but also the imaginations that have spun great stories about Wolverine in the comics. It went on, the article I pulled this from said that the Wolverine was based on the 1982 series Wolverine by Chris Claremont and Frank Miller. The up-and-coming X-Men Days of Future Past is also based on a comic book storyline.
Yeah.
He didn't go into specifics which comics he's been looking at, but he said the sequel will be set in between The Wolverine and X-Men of Days of Future Past, because apparently there's a two-year gap in between those movies.
All right, okay.
Well, he says he's got sketches and ideas, and there are many alternatives, and certainly it's indeed a window that exists.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's good that they're sort of giving some continuity to that series, you know, the X-Men and the Wolverine and those kind of things. I don't know if they're going to continue with the Origins series. There was supposed to be Origins for other characters.
Yeah, there's supposed to be a Magneto one.
Yeah.
Wolverine and Magneto, but the Magneto one never materialised.
Well, I'm not sure the Wolverine one was particularly well received, but I don't know.
That's probably what killed the series.
But no, it's nice, I think, that they're giving it some continuity. But to skip forward and then skip back, I'm not sure, that becomes a bit confusing. But I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
It's all in Fox's. It's all it's up to Fox. It's 20th Century Fox own the rights to X-Men and Wolverine, so they don't have to. They don't have to follow any. It's a Marvel property at the end of the day, isn't it?
Well, it is. Yeah, I mean, it's not.
And Fox hold the rights to it, unfortunately.
Exactly.
Or fortunately, depending which way you want to look at it.
Yeah, I think if Marvel could get their hands back on that, I think you'd expect something a lot grander, a lot. I mean, the Wolverine, it's a premium sort of part of the brand. It's one of the most recognizable, one of the most fan respected characters in the Marvel universe. I think if Marvel could get their hands on it, they could do wonderful things. I'm not sure Fox are doing it justice, I'll be honest. But we'll come back to the Wolverine a little bit later on in the show, John, when we went and had another preview screening in London. Yeah. This one you could make.
So I did.
That was fun. Okay, moving on to our next section. It's the box office. We've done staggered over a number of weeks. The idea was to visit a different box office from around the world in successive weeks. I mean, we haven't done that because we had the special with Mike Petchy. Whose fan film was shut down, keeping it Marvel, shut down by Marvel, The Dead Can't Be Distracted, his Punisher fan film. So we had that special. If anyone hasn't listened to that, it's well worth a listen because that's fascinating stuff. Mike was very gracious to give us an exclusive, a world exclusive, I think, on his thoughts on that. He's put it to bed now, moving on, not worrying about it. If the film ever comes to light, then we would like to be involved in that. I'm so sorry, John, my wife's calling me.
It's time for satisfaction. Tasty. Refreshing. Exciting. Sophisticated. Beef burgers. Remember, once you're finished, flush, then clean the cinema toilet thoroughly. You'll need to get it right in there. Go on. Round the rim. And under the bowl. And don't forget to wipe underneath the seat. Brushes and gloves are available from the cinema foyer for a £10 deposit. Leave it clean.
Not really regular at all. A semi-regular section of the podcast. The idea was that we would look at a different box office from around the world in different weeks. We did the UK box office, the first show that we did this. We did the US box office. I thought it'd be nice to take it a little bit further afield and look somewhere else in the world. It's difficult to get the figures in the same way that we did before. I've decided to go for the Bulgarian box office, that powerhouse in cinema. What I've got actually is only the biggest selling film each week of the year, rather than the top 10 as it stands at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not too dissimilar from what you'd expect elsewhere in the world. So if we look at January, we've got The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey, was up there.
Yeah.
The next week in January was quite a varied month. And then the next week, Jack Reacher was top of the box office.
Oh.
I've watched that subsequently, by the way, and I thought that was bollocks. I really thought that film sucked a lot. Did you like it? Did you watch it?
I loved it.
You loved it? You really did?
I loved it. I did. I really enjoyed it.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, I'm surprised.
I'm reading the novel. I'm reading the novels they're based on as well.
I know you're a fan of the books, but I mean the film, there were some nice moments in it, but it really is just we're going to have a car chase here, we're going to have a gunfight here, we're going to have a fight here. It's going to be raining in a quarry and spoilers. It's nothing to spoil. You've seen it all before in other films. It's literally just cut and paste from other films, put it together, there it goes. That's my opinion. I didn't enjoy it whatsoever. That's unfair. I did enjoy it. I watched it. I was entertained. I just didn't think it was any good. Anyway, moving on. Back to the Bulgarian box office. We're in January, week 3, and it was Django Unchained. Week 4, Hansel and Gretel, Witch Hunters, which lasted at the top of the box office for 3 weeks into mid-February. From February into March, top of the Bulgarian box office was A Good Day to Die Hard.
Was that there long, sorry?
3 weeks.
3 weeks.
3 weeks, yeah.
Two weeks too long.
Well, for 2 weeks following that, it was Oz the Great and Powerful. That takes us to mid-March. After Jack the Giant Slayer. Only 1 week there, because that was taken over by G.I. Joe Retaliation.
Right.
We're into mid-April now, and Oblivion is at the top for 2 weeks. Wait. Early May, Iron Man 3, 2 weeks, followed by The Great Gatsby. Oh, and answering a question that we had earlier, for 3 weeks, Fast and Furious 6.
Ah.
This takes us into early to mid-June. Now You See Me. Followed by Monsters University, followed by World War Z. I said Z, get over it. World War Z. We're into early July, and for 3 weeks, Despicable Me 2, which the kids absolutely adored. I really need to watch that because it sounds hilarious. One of my neighbours was telling me it's just brilliant. Like, they were counting down the days till it came out on DVD. After that, we're at the end of July, and it's The Wolverine, followed by, in early August, Red 2. Is that even out here?
It comes out on DVD and Blu-ray in a few weeks.
Oh, I see. Okay. I thought that was a cinema advert I saw on telly earlier. Clearly not. Second week of August, Elysium, followed by, and for 3 weeks, The Smurfs 2.
Oh, God. For 3 weeks?
3 weeks.
Oh.
We're into September now, and it's Planes at number one for 2 weeks. And then The Family for 1 week. I don't know. The Family 2013, sorry, in brackets. After that is Runner Runner. I've no idea what that is.
It's Ben Affleck and Justin Timberlake, I think.
Okay. First week in October, Metallica, Through the Never. Wow! That was number one.
Really?
Number one in their box office.
Wow!
In Bulgaria. Awesome. Bulgaria is growing on me. Second and third week of October, we've got Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2, followed by Escape Plan. Don't know what that is.
Oh, that's Sylvester Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger in a prison.
Okay, skip that. For the whole of November to date, it's been Thor the Dark World at the top.
Hey.
So there we go, Bulgarian box office. It's not too far dissimilar from what you'd expect here. I don't know why I'd expect it to be, but I thought there may be a few more homegrown films, because a quick Google search sort of shows that there is a sort of Bulgarian movie industry of sorts. So So yeah, quite surprised there's nothing local in there. But I suppose, you know, it's always going to be the blockbusters that get to the top of the charts, isn't it?
Yeah, that Metallica one's a big surprise, though.
Yeah, you know, kudos for that, absolutely. Okay, so we'll move on to the next section. And we asked, as we do every time we do a show, I really want to say every week, but we don't do these every week. So more like every month, isn't it? We ask a question on Twitter. I've given up on Facebook. I can't stand Facebook. So we asked the Twitter question, and this time around, I asked it just for today. And the question was, is it time now that we had a Doctor Who big screen motion picture? And a few mixed reactions to this. I'm going to give shout outs, and there's actually a prize at stake for this. We're giving away a Matt Smith as the 11th Doctor Who figurine that I got sent with a fact file to review. I'll include the fact file in the prize as well. It's opened, but it's in perfect condition. So a Matt Smith figurine for the Doctor Who fans. I thought we could give some away this week, and I don't. Awesome. I don't need it. I don't want it. So this will go on to one lucky person. So what do you think, John? What's your answer? If we have, are we due now a Doctor Who big screen movie? I mean, because it's made by BBC America and BBC Cymru, BBC Wales, in association. It is. It's not anything to do with BBC in England.
Ever since it came back with what's his name, Eccleston, it's been Welsh, isn't it? Welsh production.
Absolutely, yeah. And in fact, my wife was lucky enough to go and film on the set there because she used to work for Children's BBC, and she went and filmed some behind the scenes stuff. I can't remember what for. But so exciting. And in fact, we pass a TARDIS quite regularly. It's not actually a TARDIS, but a police box, an old-fashioned blue police box. There's one outside Earl's Court tube station. You can Google
it.
In fact, if you do Google it, go Street View, you can actually click to go inside it. And when you go inside, it's a TARDIS.
Awesome.
Brilliant. Do that, people. Look that up. Earl's Court TARDIS on Google Street View. And you can go inside the TARDIS. It's worth checking out. But what do you think? Do you think we need a Doctor Who movie now?
Tricky one. I mean, you could go the cinema route, have the bigger budget, have very sort of expensive looking Doctor Who. But then, would it have to run separate from the TV series?
Maybe.
Doctor Who is so interlinked across the last 50 years. I mean, they did sort of, I don't know, it must have been an independent production. I'm not up on the history of it, but they made those, is it one or two films with Peter Cushing as Doctor Who?
Yeah, there were. I mean, there have been Doctor Who movies before, but I don't know. I'm just not a fan. I just don't know enough about it. I really don't.
I mean, I think you'd have to play it safe. You'd have to have a really sort of standalone story.
Yeah,
the future TV series, you know, just would have to ignore it basically, because you run the risk of people not seeing the film and they're not knowing what they're talking about when they're watching the TV series.
Well, I mean, the Day of the Doctor that was on to celebrate the 50th anniversary, I watched it purely out of curiosity, having watched the what we mentioned before, the
an adventure in time and space.
Exactly, yeah, that piqued my interest, and. So I did watch The Day of the Doctor. I mean, I'll be honest, I didn't get a lot of the references. I really thought it was a nice touch to bring out Tom Baker at the end.
That was nice, yeah.
He's really the Doctor. Yeah, he's the Doctor I recognise most. He's for me, he's the Doctor. And then, as I said, Peter Davison was the one who was my Doctor as a kid growing up. He was the one that was on screen at the time. But they did show it in the cinema. You could go and watch that in the cinema live.
1,500 cinemas spread across 98 countries.
Exactly. I mean, phenomenal. I mean, amazing to think that.
I mean, they actually got a Guinness World Record last night. I've forgotten the exact wording, but it's basically, it's for showing one program at the same time across the world.
Right.
Because God knows how many TV stations all showed it at, what was it? 8:05 GMT or whatever it was.
I'll be honest, I've recorded it and watched it later. But I've got the kids, so I had to get them into bed and whatever. You know, it's just not possible for us to watch it live. And as much as my oldest really, really wants to watch Doctor Who, she's too young. She would have been scared by it. She really would have.
There was some quite, especially the morphing effect between Zygon and human. That's quite, well, that's a bit too much for the kids.
Yeah, I mean, Doctor Who's always been a bit naff in the monsters department, I think, but that's part of its charm.
Yeah.
I will not be tuning in for the for every episode of the series when it comes on. I don't think, if my wife is inclined to do so, perhaps I will, but it's not on my list of things to do. But right. I was interested to see this Day of the Doctor episode. So yeah, it was interesting. But anyway, back to the Twitter question, and the general consensus has been this. And a few familiar names here, people who maybe we've forgotten about, that do contribute to the show from time to time. So it's me, good pal, my podcasting buddy from the Evil Teddy Bear podcast, Corey Epps, yeah, at Core Evil 2013. He says, I think we already had it, but yes, I'd love to see a big screen movie again. The counter position comes from Gavin_RM for mother. He says, no. In fact, I would love to return to the old days. Longer lasting storylines, but shorter episodes. And I kind of agree with that. I don't know how long an average episode is. Is it 40 minutes to an hour?
They're about 40, 45 minutes, I think.
Right. I mean, that seems like a lot.
But in our day as children, there were a lot. What, 20, 25?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, we don't have adverts because it's a BBC program here. Other countries do put adverts in their Doctor Who episodes. So I guess, 45 minutes works on an international market because they can fill it out for a full hour with adverts.
Yeah.
So I can see why they do that. I kind of agree with Gavin there that, shorter episodes but stretched out over longer storylines would be nice, but I can't see it happening. I can't see this Twitter name. Bear me a sec. Their username, like their screen name is so long it's taken them off the screen. So, it's at OKBeats. That's OHKAY Beats. And that person says, yeah, it would work. Which, well, it's brief, but it's to the point. Dommal, DHOMAL, who has been in touch before, he says, my problem is, sadly, that I've not really followed Doctor Who since Tom Baker when I was a kid, but yes, it could work. So the yeses seem to be getting it so far. I don't know if this person's ever contributed before. MC_Hunter1990, aka Jeffy Jeff. I would say yes, there's been a renewal not only in sci-fi interest, but in British programming, which I think is true. I think British programming is getting more exposure internationally, especially in the US, I think programs like Sherlock Holmes
they're so jealous they have to make their own version.
If you see in online today, there's emerged a US remake of Doctor Who, a full episode. If it was American with American actors, I haven't watched it yet, but that might be worth checking out.
It's actually online, the whole episode.
I think so. From what I've seen, again, I've been doing the kid duty most of the day, so.
Yeah,
I haven't had a lot of time to go online today, apart from the 2 hours I were at a birthday party this afternoon, and that's when I watched the Green Lantern. God, what terrible use of that spare time!
If you want some other examples, I mean, there used to be a British comedy called Coupling, which coincidentally was written by Stephen Moffat, who's the guy behind the current run of Doctor Who.
Yes,
they took that to America. And they took the scripts and said, we'll just do the exact same scripts, but with our actors, our production. That lasted 3 episodes and it's cancelled. Right. And you watch it as well, and you're just like, this doesn't feel right. This is weird.
Yeah.
And something else you might want to, other British sci-fi, Red Dwarf.
Yeah.
The Americans tried twice. There are actually two different pilots you can watch on YouTube, and they're both awful.
Yeah, but I mean,
it doesn't work.
But the the British version is well received out there, and as is the IT crowd and things like that. So yeah, I think Black Books as well is well received. So yeah, maybe there has been a resurgence of British programming over there. I've just seen, literally as we were recording, Watu has retweeted the question, so we might get a few more answers after the show. So if we do, apologies that they're not included. The last one that we've got is from at Council Wolf. He says no, and I say no because Doctor Who doesn't need a movie. while the extra FX budget might be nice, Doctor Who really shines as a serial. And again, I agree, that's a very fair point. So I appreciate all the feedback on that one. I said I would pick at random, but actually I'm not going to do that. I'll be honest, I've got a favourite answer. And so I'm going to arrange to send the Doctor Who figurine to Gavin _R_M, who said, no, in fact, I would love a return to the old days, longer lasting storylines, but shorter episodes. So I will DM Gavin and arrange to send that out to him.
Well done, Gavin.
And so, yeah, congratulations. Thank you for your input. And thank you, everyone, for your input. I'm sorry, I know I said it was going to be random, but fuck it. It's my Doctor Who figure. I'm going to give it away. So there we go. And if you don't like it, check the terms and conditions. They are clearly written in there that I can do whatever the fuck I like. Right, John, we're gonna have to bring the show to a close soon, but we've still got two sections to go. We've got remakes next, and then afterwards we're going to be talking about our night watching The Wolverine. So let's get on with remakes.
Roadhouse is being remade.
why would they do it?
I don't know. All we know is, for those who don't know, Roadhouse is a 1989 movie with Patrick Swayze and Kelly Lynch. I've never actually seen it, to be honest, but it's about a bouncer with a past who's hired to tame a dirty bar in Missouri and ends up taking on a corrupt businessman. Yeah. And apparently the violence is so over the top, it's camp.
I've seen it. It hasn't left much of a lasting impression, but yeah, I've seen it. It doesn't need remaking. It really doesn't. It should be very low on someone's list of things to make. Again, this isn't Jerry Bruckheimer, is it, with his Alzheimer's?
No. So far, it's just got one director attached, a guy called Rob Cohen, who was the director of the original Fast and the Furious.
Right.
I think he directed the third Mummy movie as well.
So it'll be Roadhouse with lots of gear changes.
Yeah, lots of car chases, not much fighting.
Okay, I can't even be bothered to go into details. It's so pitiful.
No, but the article I pulled that from just ends with saying that which continues MGM's plans in recent years to exploit its library titles. So I don't know if that's a continuing theme from MGM.
Right. Yeah.
Remaking all stuff. Oh, did you hear? Speaking, like I just remembered, you hear about the It's a Wonderful Life. The story continues or something. Did you hear about that?
No, I didn't. Again, also ridiculous.
Some film studio said we're going to make a sequel to It's a Wonderful Life. Is it the one that's set up in Christmas?
Yeah.
1950s movie, isn't it?
It's a classic American film.
They said we're going to make a sequel, and it's going to be called It's a Wonderful Life, the rest of the story, I think was its title. And someone from the original who's still around was going to be in it, and they said they've got a script and they're going to start production next year, I think, for a 2015 release. And everyone's like, oh, out of all the worst things that Hollywood could have done, this has got to be the lowest. But then Paramount stepped in and said, no, fuck you, we own the rights. You can't do that. And they went, well, the film's over 50 years old or something, the rights have gone into public domain. And they went, and Paramount go, no, the rights were held by this company who we brought in 1999, so we own the rights, and you haven't asked us for permission, so you do this. Let's get a court. And so everyone's like, hooray, Paramount.
Well, yeah, quite right too. I mean, this section gets more ridiculous every week. It really does. I think in future, I'm just going to have to get drunk before we do it to be able to absorb what you're saying, because I don't think you can top that with your third piece of information, but let's have a go.
Another name's popped up for the Crow reboot that's going ahead.
Oh yeah, this may be what you're telling us, but I'm going to ask anyway. Did I hear that the lead character has changed again?
No, the Luke Evans is still signed on to play Eric Draven.
Right, okay.
The film's being directed by a name I'm going to mispronounce badly, F. Xavier Gutierrez.
Yeah, no, that's pretty good, yeah.
There's a rumour going around that a guy called Norman Reedus, who's most recently been seen in The Walking Dead, is the top choice for a major role in the film. So he may be the villain or something.
Right, okay.
Even more interesting than that was that at one point, it's the best part of the whole article, I thought, they were thinking of getting Kristen Stewart for the role of Eric Draven's ill-fated fiancée.
Well, at least, I mean, she dies fairly quickly. I mean, there's that, but...
Well, apparently the producers decided quite quickly that they didn't want her in it at all.
I don't have any hatred towards her. I don't, you know, I know that, I mean, we've mentioned this before, we've touched on it before, but I can't remember what the name of the film was, but I watched a film about Joan Jett, and she's in that, and I thought she did quite a, you know, decent job in it. And I know she's got this sort of stigma attached to her where she's quite emotionless, very, you know, dull in the face and what have you, but I think that, you know, that's really come from the Twilight films where, you know, that's what was expected of her. I haven't seen enough of her on screen. I haven't seen enough films with her in to really say to give any more flesh to that. But I wouldn't be offended if she was. I mean, I'll say that. That's all I can say.
Okay.
So, all right, there we go. Yeah, remakes and reboots. It just gets crazier every week, John.
It's mad, isn't it? I mean, half this stuff will probably never reach the screen, but.
Well, we can hope. Okay, so I guess we should round up the show and talk about that special preview screening we had.
Indeed.
Of the Wolverine extended cut. And we were again invited, as with Thor, you know, kind of a Marvelistic theme going on in this show. This was actually 20th Century Fox Home Media that invited us along for a preview screening of The Wolverine, the extended cut, before it came out on the Blu-ray. We went to a screening on the Thursday before the release on the Monday.
Uh-huh.
We went along to, it's actually a sort of part private members club, part sort of cultural centre, called the Hospital Club in London's Covent Garden. It's on Endell Street. Quite a nice place, very plush, nice to look at. Into, again, another very plush cinema screen. Apparently, I'm told by our host for the evening, it's the only private screen in London that has 3D capabilities. Not that we watched a film in 3D. No. It was in 2D, and it was off the Blu-ray, you know, fair enough. I mean, that's what we were going to see. The film, as anyone who's seen it, is mostly set in Japan. So, appropriately enough, they themed the buffet with sushi.
For sushi.
Okay, and we had Kirin Lager, which is a Japanese brand. I didn't check the wine to see whether that was Japanese, and there was Coca-Cola there. But we got to chew on some nuts.
Coated peanuts, olives.
So yeah, battered prawns on skewers. So very nice, very highbrow, really, for what was a gathering of the most awkward bunch of movie nerds you've ever seen in your life. We're all sort of standing around going, fucking hell.
What's going on?
I don't normally talk to anyone other than...
Yeah.
The only way it would have been less awkward is if we all got our phones out, connected on Twitter and started conversing that way. But I did get to speak with a few people, try a little bit of networking. I mean, I don't think there was anyone there from recognisable sites like Empire or, you know, Variety or anything. Any of the big, you know... They were clearly aiming this at the bloggers market.
Us.
Yeah, us, you know, people who have talked about the film before. Their bit of software had identified us as good candidates for this screening. So we went along, very gracious, you know, very nice. We had a choice of, I say the cinema only sat about 20 people, would you?
Maybe 30.
Yeah, you're probably right. I think it was three or
four. Was it five or six massive beanbags, people who wanted to crash on those down at the front?
Yeah, I was fucked if I'm going to sit through a whole film on a beanbag. What am I, 12?
They made good footrests.
They did, yeah. We put our feet up. But yeah, we had front and centre. We were prime position to watch the film. And so we did. We watched it. Neither of us had been to the cinema to watch The Wolverine. So although there was an extra 15 minutes of footage there, I couldn't tell you. Couldn't tell you what it is. But yeah, obviously...
Apparently there's more CGI blood has been added to make it more violent. That's one of the...
Is that right?
Aspects. Apparently. It's quite common these days, isn't it?
I don't know, but it smacks a little bit of the last Die Hard film where, you know, it was cut for a certain certification in the cinema to maximise revenue that way. And then when it comes out on DVD, they've added all the extra bits. It goes up a certificate and they make a bit more because, you know, it's kind of bad in a way, but you can see why they do it. At the cinema, if you are underage, you're not getting into that screening. If it's on DVD or Blu-ray, who's actually checking your age when you buy these things? No one, really. You can buy it online. Who knows how old you are? Nobody.
Yeah.
So, you know, it can go up a certificate and not really affect sales, I think, is the way they market it. But the film as a whole, I wasn't blown away. I didn't hate it. it was perfectly entertaining. There were some good parts to it. I'll be honest, there were parts where I got a bit bored and was looking around the cinema going, this is quite nice. Yeah. Oh, look, can't see the speakers. I wonder what's through that door. But as a whole, the film was all right. I mean, the silver samurai at the end was a bit naff. It was a bit contrived. It was a bit... It didn't strike me. I wonder if, you know, 20th Century Fox and Marvel know it didn't really perform as well as they might have liked, despite being number one in the Bulgarian box office for at least a week. I don't think it performed as well as perhaps expected for a film of that type at the cinema. So I'm sure it'll do quite well on Blu-ray and DVD. But, I mean, what they have got to coincide with the Blu-ray release is a second screen app. And this is where I start to get very concerned. I'd like, you know, obviously to hear your opinions on this, John, because I don't know if I'm on my own on this. But it was explained, it wasn't ready for us to trial on the night. I think that was the intention, that we could have tried it, but it wasn't ready. You know, development of these things goes down to the wire. I don't think it was fully ready until maybe a day after the DVD or Blu-ray release. But it's a second screen app. And if anyone's ever read Marvel Comics, Marvel Now, they have an app called the AR app, where you download it onto your phone. When you go through the comic, you'll get to, say, a splash page, double page, or a full page, or even just a panel in on the page. And it will have the little AR logo in the corner. You sort of hold the app with uses the camera over the screen. It recognizes things, and then it shows you something extra on the screen. So it might show you the concept artwork for the page. It might show you an animated scene, or something along those lines, or just some extra content. And this is very much the same idea behind this app for a film. You sync it with the film at the beginning, and as you go through, there are points where it pops up additional information. There might be additional commentaries, differing scenes, an alternative scene, for example, things like that. Now, what concerns me is, this is all very well for the home market, do it in your own home. You can sync it with other people who are watching the film at the same time, not even in the same room, you know, it could be other side of the world. You can sync it, you can chat with them about your experiences of the film, what you're enjoying, what you think of that, you know, it was like, did you see that extra scene, blah, blah, blah. So you can contact other people through it. But my concern is, if I am looking at a second device while I'm watching a film or watching a TV program, it's usually indicative that I'm not captivated by what's going on the screen. If the film is that good, I will be watching the film. I won't be watching what's going on my phone or on my iPad or whatever. So that's my first concern. That is it just a gimmick to detract from a film that perhaps isn't as good as it should be? Secondly, introduce this kind of thing into the cinema and you have lost me from the cinema. I just will not go, because I am fucked if I'm going to sit through a film where everybody's staring at their mobiles. It will drive me insane. It drives me insane that people talk at the cinema as it is, or you get, you know, people making comments or laughing or even rustling their popcorn too loud. It drives me mental. To have people sat there with screens glowing, it would kill me, absolutely kill me. So I'm really concerned about the way this is going. If it goes to cinemas, I can see it being a real problem. So, John, what are your thoughts on the second screen app?
Okay, starting with point two, I don't think that they're designed for the cinema.
No, well, I would hope not too.
What I think is you've come across as a bit confused, because I've used a couple of these before. Because Blu-ray players these days are normally connected to your internet, and your phone or tablet is as well.
Yeah.
So what happens is, when you watch the film, your tablet with the software actually communicates with the Blu-ray player, so they sync up perfectly, and then they can interact. And you can normally, rather than use your remote control, you can use the app to control the Blu-ray player and interact with behind-the-scenes stuff.
Okay, yeah, I think
that's what this is, you know, I think it's aimed at people who want to learn more about the film. It's not something you do when you watch it the first time round.
No.
You watch it, you know, you watch it again, and you want to find out more about the film, or ruinings of, as my missus likes to call it. And, yes, it's a way to experience the film again in a slightly different way, I suppose.
Okay, so in effect, what you're saying is it's giving it longevity, you know, extra extra features and things. It's like watching the film again with a commentary on. You're watching it again.
Yeah, very much so. It's like if you can't have the commentary on while you're playing with the app, then you know that's at least what three watching. So you watch the film, you watch it with the commentary, then you watch it again.
Yeah.
Interacting with an application of some kind.
Okay, I see that. No, that's a fair point, and which is why it's good to have a different point of view. I hadn't taken into consideration the fact that you control it from the app, although thinking back, I think our host did mention that, and I obviously blanked that out. And I understand how that works. You in the same way that I can watch YouTube on my TV and just queue stuff up on my iPad to watch, and
yeah.
It comes up next. Yeah, I can see how that works.
I mean, it does have its drawbacks. I mean, the last time I did this is ages ago, and I think it might have been Back to the Future on Blu-ray. There was content on the Blu-ray which was actually locked away, and it can only become available to you once you played around with the relevant app to go with the Blu-ray title.
Right.
I think that's a bit unfair. You shouldn't start. You know, I know on one hand the people, oh, it'd be great. They can buy it. They can start playing with the app. They can unlock extra content. Well, no. Yeah, don't start hiding things away and start turning it into a game. Yeah. I don't want to start looking for this stuff. I buy films to watch and enjoy. I've got consoles and tablets to play games on.
Yeah.
I don't have to, you know, hunt the deleted scene. You know?
And what about the people that, you know, don't have their Blu-ray player connected to the internet, or
then they can't use it full stop?
Well, exactly. You're taking that enjoyment away from, you know, part of your market. And to be honest, how many people actually do? I mean, I would say the vast majority don't have their Blu-ray player, you know, Wi-Fi enabled or you know, connected via Ethernet to their router. I mean, I love gadgets and toys and technology, but I mean, I've only got mine connected in the last 2 weeks or whatever. I mean, partially thanks to BT putting my fucking phone line in my bedroom about 5 years ago. Thanks ever so much. I finally got them to move it after 5 years to next to my TV, which makes a lot more sense. But I'm still concerned by this and how far it can go, and you know what the implications could be of a second screen app, especially like I say in the cinema. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they should block out mobile, you know, signals in all cinemas. I know they do in some. They should do it in all cinemas.
Really? I heard they couldn't do it.
Oh, really?
I thought there was sort of health and safety concerns, as in someone like a doctor or that couldn't receive an emergency phone call.
Oh, I suppose. I mean, yeah. I have definitely been in cinemas where you couldn't get a reception.
Oh, but yeah. I've been to cinemas where you get no signal. Yeah.
So I
don't know if that's intentional or not.
Well, I think it should be. I think if you're a doctor and you're going to the cinema, you should leave the number of the cinema with anyone that needs to contact you.
So, fair point.
Okay, look, you might die today, but if you're going to, give the cinema a call. They'll get me. Okay. What did you think of the film then?
The only word I can think of is underwhelmed.
It's
enjoyable, it's entertaining, but it's, can't put my finger on it.
It just misses that sort of wow factor, that little bit of, you know, excitement. We love Wolverine as a character. I mean, you more than most. And it's just, you know, remind our audience that you named your first son Logan. You love Wolverine. But didn't feel me.
I mean, you got. I'm trying to think what made it stand out. I mean, you've got hand-to-hand fights, but then the other movies have done that.
Right, this is what
you got the bullet train sequence.
Yeah, it went on too long. I mean,
it's okay.
If that was one of the extended scenes, then it went on too long.
As far the fight against the ninjas was nothing special. the fight against, you know, the end of level boss syndrome. We have to fight the silver samurai at the end.
I mean, here's what really, I think, just to summarize what was wrong about that film. I didn't care about any of the characters, for starters. I didn't care about the Wolverine. I didn't, he's indestructible. You know, he's going to be all right in the end. So you're not concerned for him. There's no sense of peril when it comes to him.
And the girl's got a weird shaped face.
She does have a weird shaped face. Perhaps that's unkind to say, but she does.
Yeah, I know she does, though.
I thought it was grim, the fact that he is obviously a man in his mid to late 40s and he's bedding down with a very young girl. I thought that was a bit, I felt a little bit uncomfortable with that, I'll be honest. As somebody with two young daughters, obviously not, you know, of that age, but
Technically, he's older than that, isn't he? How old is he supposed to be?
Hundreds of years old, isn't he? I don't know.
18 something, isn't it supposed to be when he was born?
I don't know. I can't be sure. But I still found that quite disturbing. I found the Jean Grey cutscenes were a little bit, I don't know, it just seemed a bit weird. I don't know if it really added to the film. I know it was quite an integral part of it, but it just felt a bit...
Did rely on you very heavily watching X-Men The Last Stand that lot, didn't it? If you hadn't seen X-Men The Last Stand, then you'd just be, you know, who is this woman? Is she an old wife? What?
Yeah, I mean, there really is no explanation for it. But then I guess... I don't know. If you know the Wolverine, I guess you would know that. I guess. I don't know. I'm not sure. But what really bugged me, I think, what I hated most about that film was the action scenes. It's almost Transformers syndrome. It was all done on the sort of shaky hand cams, and you couldn't see what was going on. It was just wobbling all over the fucking place. And it's like you've got all this great choreography with the ninjas and all this wonderful, you know, stuff going on, the movement and the fluidity of their movement, and you can't see it because the camera's all over the bloody place. It's like they took a camcorder, strapped it onto a fucking pogo stick and bounced along behind it trying to catch the footage. I don't know. So that bugged me about it, I'll be honest. But and we're really not doing ourselves any favours here. We may not get invited to any of these things again. But yeah, we've got to be honest. That's what we think.
And we did get to see the alternate ending as well.
Well, that was the most exciting bit, and this is what bothered me. We ran out of time on the evening where we were supposed to see a bit more extra footage, bonus material, probably stuff that's available on the Blu-ray disc. But we just, you know, we got two scenes basically. One was an alternate ending, and that was the most exciting thing probably. Do you want to explain it?
Yeah, because the scene ends up with him getting on a plane and flying to... He can get to go wherever he wants, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's got a free pass to go anywhere in the world, basically. And he doesn't know where he wants to go.
Yeah, and that's basically how the movie ends. And as it plays out in the theatrical cut, that's it. The woman he's with, not the love interest, but the... I don't know how to describe her, what her character was.
Which kind of his companion throughout the film.
Companion, yeah. The companion he's with throughout the film decides that she's going with him. And that's the end of the movie, cut to black. In this alternate scene, it's quite clear she's actually carrying a box this time when they're on the plane, and she puts this ornate box on the table in front of him because they're on a private jet, and he says, "Oh, what's this?" And she goes, "Oh, open it and see." And he opens it up, and all neatly folded up and packed away is sort of the brown and yellow Wolverine costume he wears in the comics.
Yeah, and that was really exciting. That was really fun to see. And you kind of wonder why did they cut that out of the film? I mean...
You mentioned that, and I actually read there's a little thing on the Total Film website where they spoke to the director about what he did in the extended cut, and they asked, why did you remove this alternate scene? And he said it was a great in-joke for all the comic book fans, but for everyone who's only ever watched Wolverine as a movie character, that's totally lost on them.
Yeah.
They walk out of the cinema going, well, what was that brown and yellow stuff in a box? What was that all about? And they walk away from the movie... sort of, you know, with a sort of big question mark hanging over it.
Well, I can see that, and that's a valid point. I mean, fair play. And I would say that actually the cut they used in the cinematic version is just neater, it's tidier. I think it works just slightly better, but as a fan, you know, as somebody who does get the relevance of it, it was very exciting. So, I don't know. But the other thing we saw was...
Bryan Singer taking us on a walkthrough through the various sets of Days of Future Past.
Which is exciting again. It's really nice.
That was a really interesting little sneak peek, that was. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, and we've seen some of the pictures online, especially on Singer's Instagram feed or Twitter feed. He's posted pictures of the set, but you got to see a recreation of the set where you know the long corridor that leads to Cerebrum and sort of underground part of the mansion, I suppose. And
the mansion itself, we saw, didn't we?
Yeah.
Was it part? Some part of the White House?
It was exciting to see it, and you saw some of the cast, hanging out on set. And
Hugh Jackman on his phone in between takes.
Exactly. Yeah, that could be an X-Men film that I enjoy because I haven't enjoyed them really for a long time. I kind of enjoyed the first one, and it really lost me after that. But Days of Future Past could be one that I really enjoy. So I'm looking forward to that. So it was really worth going for those extra scenes. And you know, hopefully 20th Century Fox Home Media will invite us to more of these things. That's it, really. That's the Wolverine. But yeah, truly exciting news this week. I mean, to get to go to see Thor early, to go and get to see the Wolverine extended cut early, and to find out what's going on in the Bulgarian box office. Truly exciting stuff this week, John, I think. Okay, so until the next show, thank you ever so much for listening. John, thank you ever so much for joining me once more.
Thank you, Will, for asking me. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thank you, Jeff. TheUnheardNerd.com.